feeling one-up and therefore more powerful. It is a no-risk potshot. The damage is done before the partner can see it coming. Winning is assured, and the enemy, the projection, is put down once more. Trivializing, undermining, threatening, and name-calling are all defenses against repressed feelings of inadequacy and powerlessness. They are power plays designed by the abuser to denigrate and diminish his partner, his projection. When the abuser's projection is pervasive, he treats his partner as if she were an extension of himself, the glove on his hand, under his control, there to follow orders. As long as he maintains control of his projection, he feels defended and protected from his own feelings. By forgetting, the abuser denies responsibility for his behavior while acting out his hostility. In this way, he protects his ideal image and maintains his defenses. All forms of abuse deny the hurt inner child and the acting out of its hostility. The abuser's denial perpetuates his identification with his ideal image, maintains his projection upon his partner, and is a means of avoiding responsibility for his behavior and for its consequences. Unless he is willing to look into himself, he will not perceive his lack. If he does look into himself, he will confront his own beast in the jungle, a life spent not in living, but in keeping his feelings at bay. Unless he actively seeks personal change through the hard work of therapy, he will, to some degree, have lived a non-life and have been, to some degree, only an idea of himself. This is his own great personal tragedy. Chapter 16. Stress and Verbal Abuse. Sometimes you have to get to know someone really well to realize you're really strangers. Mary Tyler Moore. In verbally abusive relationships, stress born of unemployment, uncertainty, and personal losses can often exacerbate abuse. Rather than bonding couples together so that they deal with the problems, such stress can split them apart. When outside adverse circumstances affect a verbally abusive relationship, the relationship usually worsens. Women all over the world have told me that their spouses have been angrier, colder, more accusatory, and more blaming when faced with a failure or even just the potential of one. In either case, somehow the partner is blamed or in some way held responsible. Why? Because verbal abusers perceive their partners to be responsible for all their unhappiness. Thus, they are more likely to be angrier or more silent, or more blaming and accusatory, or more demanding and threatening. Even more significantly, they are unlikely to discuss problems in a rational way with their partners, because they don't usually really perceive their partners as separate people, but rather as all needs meeting extensions of themselves, or as simply an all needs meeting mother. If they've had financial losses, mom should make everything okay again. If a family member has passed away, she should make them feel better. Finally, stressful events leave verbal abusers more beside themselves, and therefore more deeply merged into their partners. Their anxiety grows when their partners do not match their projected selves. They expect their partners to divine what to say and do, and even perceive what they, the abusers, think and require. You know what I want, / what I said, / what you did, etc. If a verbal abuser talked to his partner as if she were a true equal in the relationship, he would be acknowledging her personhood, her separateness, herself. This would feel like suicide to the abuser, because he is projected into her. She is the rest of him. She is his feminine side. She is his unintegrated side. If he talks with her in a real way, he loses half or more of himself. Consequently, instead of discussing their fears and feelings and working with their partners to find solutions, abusers exacerbate the problem, thereby creating more anxiety and stress within the relationship. If they have children, the abuser's behavior also has a negative effect on them. This rationale explains why the abuser doesn't turn to the partner for emotional support, but instead becomes more abusive. A controlling personality does not seek emotional support from the partner, but rather blames the partner for the problem. He gets angrier and/or increases his losses by denying reality. When the partner of an overt, raging, shouting, name-calling verbal abuser, or a covert, insidiously undermining verbal abuser, can't take it anymore, divorce is often the only escape. This is especially true when the partner is too traumatized to stay, despite promises of change. Of course, if children are involved, custody issues can prove shockingly difficult. Until the partner has a name for what is happening, she may feel that she is responsible for not doing, speaking, or acting the right way, since all abuse carries some kind of anger and/or blame with it. Following are some examples of how abuse increases with loss and uncertainty. Some women have found that the respite from abuse that occurred when their spouses were working outside the home disappeared when they lost their jobs and ended up home all day. Living in fear. Julie tells this story. In my home, the economic downturn has had a real impact. My husband, Dan, is home all day, every day. I don't get a break. I fear him, but I can't afford to leave him. Early this year, he was fired from the latest of many lost jobs. Dan decided to work from home, so he's here all the time. I handle all the home and property responsibilities. I do everything. However, he has increased the abuse. He tells me I'm worthless, and he holds the threat of another physical attack. It's no wonder that I fear him. I still feel the physical pain. Although Dan hasn't hit me in a number of years, other things have happened to keep that power over me present. So the threat of physical abuse has never really gone away. I think it is telling that in the years we've been together, I've never felt safe and secure. My dreams are so revealing. In any dream I have where he appears, he's trying to hurt me. If anything about the economic downturn shows how fearful I am, it's my dreams. Since he was fired early this year, I have had more dreams where I wake up screaming or where I feel very, very threatened, more than I have had in total throughout all the previous years. It's the never knowing what might set him off that is so hard, and the living with it day in and day out. When he went to work, I had at least a few hours here and there to recuperate. Now, living with him is worse than ever. There is no respite. For a long time, I thought I could do enough to win his love. I could not understand what was wrong until I finally made sense of it when I discovered it was verbal abuse and all about control. I don't know if I can survive with him home now. I would need job training to leave, or I would have to live on minimum wage. I have found it so difficult just to be able to do the work necessary around the house unimpeded by demands and interference. I never realized until now how much I counted on his time in the office or his time traveling to just be able to think. I have little downtime when I can at least relax my guard a little. I feel like I'm always trying to find ways to run away from home. I'm aware of the potential landmines that come up in conversations, so I work quite hard to avoid them if possible. I struggle not to be isolated. He always tries to destroy my friendships, doing everything he can to isolate me. I've learned to keep most of my friendships hidden and I maintain an aura of isolation. Since my husband has been working at home, keeping up with my friendships is also much more difficult, but it is easier to act secretly than to take the abuse. On the plus side, I'm at least figuring out finally that my gut has been right since the beginning. Something was always amiss in the relationship. I now know it was not me and never has been. I can start making a plan to save myself. I know you hear from many women. Our stories are so very different, yet so very much the same. And in that there is comfort and understanding. Julie's story is typical in many ways, but particularly in the way her husband, Dan, tried to isolate her from the rest of the world. Batterers and verbal abusers often isolate their partners. It seems that the only difference between those who batter and those who don't is this: those who don't are too afraid of going to jail. When financial woes worsen the fear. Pauline shares how the stress of economic uncertainty has impacted her relationship and how trapped she too feels. The economy has affected my relationship with my verbally abusive husband because I fear what he will do if the financial perfect storm sets in for us. He's been saying that he's about to be laid off for the last 3 years. Actually, he's been saying this throughout our entire relationship. He has used that fear as the excuse for his short temper and bad behavior, which is getting worse. Before plugging into your books and the community of women I now rely on for support, I believed him. Now I know that there is no excuse for how he treats me. I fear that things will be tough financially if I file for divorce. I am unable to pay the mortgage, car, daycare, insurance, and all bills on my own each month. I can count on him fighting for the children, 50-50 custody. Verbal abuse is not recognized as abuse in my state. I've talked to 2 divorce lawyers on the subject. The courts see the willingness of the father to have the children half the time as a good thing, and it's almost always granted when requested. And 50-50 custody generally means no support either way. Whenever we discuss anything financial or otherwise, anything that is wrong is my fault. He will make a financial decision without consulting me. Then, when the decision he made turns out not to be a good one, he blames me, saying that I didn't explain something completely, as if I knew what he was doing. He actually blames me for everything. When we buy something for the house, he picks it out and I have to agree to it. When I don't agree right away, we revisit the issue repeatedly until I agree with him. If it turns out not to be a good thing, he has me ready to blame because I agreed to it, I didn't stop him, I didn't point out the negative, etc. The abuser blames his partner because his partner should make his world perfect and keep him from making a mistake like an all-needs-meeting mother would with a baby. When acknowledged abuse gets worse. Carla wrote to me about changes in what I'm experiencing from my verbally abusive husband, George, during these economically trying times. Unlike many, George knows he has a problem. He says he will change and has read The Verbally Abusive Man, Can He Change? But his good intentions have faded in the face of the recession. He has failed to do any of the many things necessary to affect change, as described in my book. Instead, the added stress has immediately increased the abuse, as though exercising more power over Carla will help him exercise more power over his business. Here's what Carla told me. My husband is the abuser, verbal only. He is aware of his verbal abuse and keeps promising to change. We are self-employed together. We both work full-time under contracts, and I do all the bookkeeping for the company. Recently, he was told that his contract, the sole source of his income, would not be renewed when it expires in 6 months. This was nothing personal. Right away, I realized that with this stress, life with him would be even more difficult. I immediately spoke to friends and family about what was happening so that they wouldn't be surprised if I showed up on their doorstep and needed a place to regroup. Carla was smart in sharing the truth about her relationship with loved ones early on. Telling friends and family about the abuse is so important. Otherwise, they are not only surprised, but also sometimes disbelieving. Making a list of what you hear is essential, as it gives you more insight and makes it clear to others that this really is abuse. Sadly, Carla's husband had invested poorly and run up huge debt. Carla lost so many assets she felt trapped and powerless. The adverse effects of the economic downturn affected her even more than it might have because of his poor decisions. She suffered from almost all categories of verbal abuse, which increased with the financial stress. Here is how she described his behavior. Probably the most prevalent abuse is anger addict and name-calling. I could not even repeat the names he calls me. I feel trapped in this relationship. If we still had the financial resources we once had, I would be able to sustain myself alone. Right now, I don't have a chance. My husband and I also discussed his being aware of his tendencies and how he shouldn't escalate his attacks during this time. He told me to just remind him of our discussion when he started getting out of hand. Predictably, this doesn't work. We're only a little over halfway to his contract's end date, and his abuse has just about doubled. And he has also started to be deliberately mean, rather than just abusive, and admitting it outright by saying, "I just wanted to see your reaction." We can't have conversation anymore because when he wants to say something, he says it, but will not engage when I respond. He either interrupts me, saying that what he wants to say is more important, or he says, "I don't have time for this," and he just walks away while I'm talking and ignores what I'm saying. If I try to tell him about my day or something I experienced, he either interrupts me, telling me that he has something else to do, or he just ignores that I'm speaking to him. If I can actually get him to stay and talk with me, it's obvious he's not listening to what I'm saying, because what he says in return makes no sense. And the conversation won't last more than a couple of minutes anyway, because he just can't be bothered. Because of family responsibilities, I end up working nights and weekends. And even though he knows I'm working, he will order me to come watch a DVD with him. He'll be infuriated if I don't. I have no interest in the videos he watches. So I'll pretty much just sit there for 2 hours wasting time, feeling pressured and anxious when I could be working. I feel imprisoned. But it's all I can do to avoid his rages and accusations. I feel very alone. I really would prefer to have a husband that I can share my day with and have an actual conversation with. He doesn't want me reading, napping, or working on anything in the car while he's driving. He told me I should be talking with him instead. But since we are incapable of having a conversation anymore, we sit in silence, sometimes for hours. Like many women who are the victims of verbal abuse, Carla faces the daily pain of having a spouse who cannot seem to hear her or to acknowledge her needs. These men usually show no sign of the abuse to come before they marry. However, Carla is biding her time and building a plan to free herself as her options increase and the economy improves. Making an escape now. Oftentimes, biding your time is not an option. Goethe was in the middle of a divorce when the economic downturn hit, but taking the financial loss enabled her to live free from abuse. Goethe remembers, "If I had been able to wait until the housing market improved, I could have asked for the full half of the house value that I was legally entitled to, but we would have had to sell the house to make that happen. I couldn't imagine having to still be dealing with my ex, probably more than a year or two later, waiting for the house to sell. I took a substantial loss, but I escaped his verbal abuse. He was willing to buy me out because I would take so little. He took out a home equity loan, and I accepted a reduced payment for my share. It's significantly less than half of the appraised value of the house. But now, I've had no contact with him for about a year. If I hadn't accepted this arrangement, I would have no money at all right now. I would still be waiting for the house to sell, still waiting to move on with the rest of my life. Gerda knew that she could survive financially, so chose freedom. Her freedom meant more than money to her. Some partners must wait and plan how they will survive. Making an escape despite great loss. Lisa shared her story to help others. She was coerced, manipulated, and sweet-talked into losing everything. And just when she might have expected a thanks for all she gave, her husband Gary blamed her for his failures, becoming ever more verbally abusive. Her engagement and marriage didn't start with abuse. Gary sounded good and looked good, but within a few short years of their wedding, he'd convinced her to sell her home, commingle her money in a new home with him, and while earning twice his income, pay off his debts as well as his new car and other new toys. Soon, they had two children. In the meantime, Lisa lost her job in a general layoff. Gary's continuing dissatisfaction and job changes brought many moves, and finally, the loss of her entire retirement, a whopping $200,000. He'd invested the money in a business that soon became another of his failures. They and their business were bankrupt. Lisa had given all she had. Lisa tells an all-too-familiar story. When I confronted him on his abusive behavior, Gary said I should be doing more, as if raising the kids, contributing to the majority of the business, giving him everything I had, and always finding ways to save money wasn't enough. The worst episodes of verbal abuse occurred right before we opened the now-failed business. He took out his stress on me. I was in a new home, isolated. Then Gary really unleashed. It was the worst of all. And then it stopped abruptly when my cousin came to visit to set up the computers for the business. Chilling. He could turn it off just like that. My cousin also helped us financially, so he needed to suck up to him. As soon as he left, the abuse escalated. I used to wish I had a decent job so I could just file for divorce and leave him. Somehow I knew that money was power and wished I could get some. I felt very trapped by that. Then I experienced a major shift in my thinking. I realized things would never get better while I was with him. He was dragging me down deeper and deeper, and I would drown if I stayed with him. So I decided I needed to leave, no matter the cost. Then, right before I filed for divorce, my job hours were cut in half. The abuse escalated at this. Gary was worse, I think, because he believed I was trapped. But I just jumped and did it. Underemployed and struggling to survive, I scraped together some money and filed for divorce. I got out. So now, I've hit a financial rock bottom, but I think I can get back on my feet. He sucked away every ounce of everything I had left to give. And even in the divorce, he still wants more. I don't think he's really a psychopath, but has those traits. The marriage left me financially destitute with bad credit and underemployed at poverty level with two kids to support. He doesn't pay full child support, according to state guidelines. He's living in a luxury apartment with new high-tech toys and new clothes and goes out to dinner with friends. I hope to keep my home and half the equity in it. Right now, I'm working on forgiving myself for my bad choices and decisions over the past 10 years. It's a grieving process, I guess. I've got a lot of regrets and things I wish I could have done differently. I'm really regretting handing over that retirement money now. It seems so stupid in hindsight. But I felt I had to do it to support him. Isn't that what wives do? Atop my list of regrets is marrying him and putting up with his nonsense for so long and letting him drag me down with him. At this point, there's no place else to go but up. A manipulative and unscrupulous verbal abuser can be extremely charming and even apologetic about past bad behavior. He will say everything his partner ever wanted to hear and be utterly convincing. Playing on her sympathies, he may get everything he ever wanted. Escaping with the help of others. Nadine managed to leave her abuser, even though the odds seemed to be stacked against her. Despite suffering a period of truly disabling injury, she managed to escape with the help of friends and family. Here is her remarkable story. I became disabled due to an injury and lost my job and everything else that I cared about. My now ex-husband took advantage of my disability income to support himself during the last 7 years of our marriage. As long as I was disabled and still receiving an income, he wasn't motivated to find employment. He would not seek work. He could have tried to find employment, but didn't. During this time, I was his maid, groundskeeper, chef, errand girl, and whipping post. Instead of appreciating the hard work that I did to maintain a homestead, he criticized everything I did. He created work for me to do, and simultaneously destroyed it. I believe he wanted me to be so busy that I couldn't possibly have time to look for a job if I did become able. At the same time, he was yelling at me for every little perceived infraction of his rules. He was always angry and always criticizing. I walked on eggshells. Instead of looking forward to spending time with a husband who claimed to love me, I began to cherish the times when he would take off on vacations with his friends and or spend evenings out at the bars with them. Because of the severity of my injury, doing my chores was difficult at best. I was unable to exercise, and I gained weight. He insulted me about my weight gain and capitalized on my disabilities to enslave me to do all of this while he played, went to parties, and stayed out drinking. I felt trapped because I didn't think I would be able to support myself if I left. I considered suicide every day. Finally, with much help and much encouragement from my family, I left. They still loved me, regardless of how isolated from them I'd become. Because of his brainwashing, I didn't feel I deserved anything. I felt so unworthy. Since I left, I have become a much happier person. I have discovered that I can support myself, minimally. My family is absolutely thrilled that they have their daughter back. I have since healed from most of my injury and from my separation, divorce. I've gotten a good job that is challenging my cognitive skills and my stamina, still. Even though it is extremely challenging for me, it is worth so much more than the hard work it took to get here. Please let your readers know that there is a much better life outside his insidious kind of abuse, and it is abuse. Although the partner often suffers alone, it is so important that she reach out to family, friends, and online groups to ask for help, support, and understanding. And like Nadine, set goals and take all possible steps with determination and faith. What is mine, and what is yours is mine. Some of the worst verbal abusers are those who control joint income. In community property states, all income earned during the course of the marriage belongs to both equally. Inheritance is accepted, However, if the inheritance is commingled, it is shared in most cases. You should always check with your own attorney or CPA regarding finances. Not knowing if you have any joint funds or what your debts are takes away your autonomy and your freedom. It is a common horror in a country that fights for freedom. A verbal abuser who controls his partner's money. All verbal abuse is a lie, and for many abusive spouses, lies are simply a strategy for theft. Some controlling people stop at nothing to get what they want. I highly recommend that anyone who is planning to commingle money earned prior to the relationship see a lawyer and get any agreement into an ironclad contract. Kate's story shows what can happen without such an agreement. The economy directly affected the process of divorcing my verbally abusive husband, Tyler. As a matter of fact, his lies had me facing financial ruin. We'd been together about 5 years, and were looking for the best place to retire in the future. I found and bought a beautiful property that seemed tailor-made to his hobbies and interests. When I found the property, I felt so good about helping to make his life better. Tyler would have what he said he really wanted. At this time, he was moving from another state and was unemployed. I sold my house, used the equity for a down payment, and took out 2 mortgages to buy it. He had promised to pay off the second mortgage once his home sold. He didn't. When his house sold, Tyler said he needed the money to help a family member. When I realized that that was a lie, I left him. After his verbal abuse, chronic unemployment, and infidelity, that was the last straw. He only worked 1 year in all of the time we were married. I see now that he was the kind of man who depended on women to make his life comfortable, even to support him. But because of the horrible economy, we had to sell the new property at a loss. I couldn't afford to keep it. After many months of struggle, I finally got him to cooperate with getting the property listed. We did get an offer for purchase, but Tyler delayed accepting it for 10 days because he did not think he should be responsible for half the deficiency, despite his name being on the title. Believe me, if the sale had made a profit, he'd have had his hand out. Of course, he accuses me of creating the loss and says it's entirely my fault, even though he lied about paying off the second mortgage. Tyler acts happy to make me pay and pay. I believe he gets pleasure from causing pain to others, and right now, he's making this as hard on me as he can. It is an absolute nightmare. I'm very lucky to have a great career and have somehow been able to manage this. Without that and the support of good friends, I'm not sure I would have lasted. I truly do not know how women with far fewer resources get out. I guess they often don't. Kate's story is typical of those involving controlling people. Controlling people often fight their partner's every request. Everything you have to do with them is a struggle. When denial accelerates financial losses. Many women are kept in the dark about the extent of their abuser's financial difficulties. Rather than consulting with their partners, the verbal abuser, otherwise known as the controller, may deny his financial losses and spend even more money. Like Tyler, who failed to pay the second mortgage, these abusers can ruin the partner's life, her security, and her credit. Lori tells a similar story. My husband has been extremely abusive to me and to our son, and he has mostly been a fake around money, borrowing to keep up an image of the big businessman. Other people are convinced he is great, but he is both verbally and financially abusive to me. I have lost so much over him. He spends money he doesn't have. Knowing now what he's like, I would never sign a loan with him. What really hurts and stands out in my mind right now is that the other day, after calling our son a piece of shit, he went and borrowed $200 from him. My son had the money from his disability check. and I had been the one who managed to arrange it for him some years ago. I will have no stability, security, or peace of mind until I leave. Lori is one of millions of women with abusive husbands who make a mess of the family finances. When economic times are bad, these men often spend money even faster. Karen's husband is typical of those abusers who are in denial about the state of financial affairs and continue to run up debt as fast as they can. Karen feels trapped, both by an economy impairing her developing career and her husband's manipulations. She tells us how he just gets worse and worse. Here is her story. My husband Brandon is so controlling that even though my father is in his 90s and is ill and near death, he won't pay for me to fly 1,000 miles to see him. If I don't go visit him soon, I may not get to see him before he dies. Or if I see him, he might not remember me. Brandon will pay for himself to visit his father, who is relatively healthy, but he won't help me to make what could be my final visit to my father. The worsening economy has made it impossible for me to finance the trip myself. When I asked Brandon for help, of course, he refused. He actually hides his check and only pays a small amount towards our mortgage and car insurance. I know he denies the economic circumstances, squanders his six-figure income, and runs up credit card debt he tries to hide. I have started a new career and am just developing my clientele. It will be my life's work, but it doesn't pay what a corporate job does. The thing that really irks me is that he seems to take pleasure in refusing the things that mean the most to me. It's very, very stressful to me to be financially unable to leave a man who has a smug, self-satisfied smile when he says no to what seems a very reasonable and even urgent request. One of my dreams in life is to create a business through which I can empower other women in similar situations so that they can escape this type of hideous trap. But first, I have to get myself out, and this economy is not helping me do that. It seems like yet another endless, abusive cycle. It is exhausting, and like other victims, I thought something was wrong with me. I read so many self-help books, looking for answers. Brandon was so good at convincing me that I was somehow too sensitive and that I, who had begun to feel I deserved nothing, was too demanding. Finally, I found the name of what was happening. I was being verbally abused. I will never be in a relationship with anyone again who tells me what I am or what I think or what I feel or what is wrong with me. If it starts the day after, the week after, or a month after a marriage, I will end it, because I know that it won't get better. I now have a master plan to get out of this situation. A divorce may mean that I have to file for bankruptcy for debt he acquired in our marriage. But I will make it. I will survive and help others do the same. Long after the economy rebounds, women will be healing the wounds inflicted by their abusers. The scars will remain. Such damage takes time to be undone. Chapter 17. Irrational Behavior to the Extreme. It seems that being ridiculed is not as damaging as being ignored. The most damaging form of behavior is withholding your attention. Masaru Emoto, The Hidden Messages in Water. Let's briefly review how I've described verbal abuse, and then we'll look at it in an entirely new way. In this book, I classified verbal abuse according to category. In other words, we can describe verbal abuse by labeling it, for example, as withholding, accusing, judging, etc. The range of abuse extends from the most covert, such as withholding, to the most overt, name-calling. In the verbally abusive man, can he change? I classify verbal abuse in a second way, according to how the abuser defines the partner. Here are a few examples. He may tell you what you are. You're fat, stupid, crazy. He may tell you what you think. You think you're smarter than anyone. You know everything. I don't know what you're up to. He may tell you what you are trying to do. You're trying to start a fight, be right, make me look bad. In all, in the verbally abusive man, can he change? I list nearly 400 examples of ways that verbally abusive people may tell you not only what you are and what you think, but also what you want, feel, are doing, are like, and so forth. Doesn't it already sound like the verbal abuser is out of touch with reality? Lucky are those who've never had their inner reality defined by their significant other. Although they may have heard a commercial where some voice declares, "This is the sale you've been waiting for," they know such statements are nonsense. So also are such statements by abusers. There's a third way to perceive verbal abuse as well. That is, according to its degree of craziness. But first, let's see how partners may commonly respond to overt and covert abuse, and also explore some additional ways. Responding to overt and covert abuse. It is easiest to spot overt abuse, such as name-calling, because it is the most obvious. But some other abuses are harder to spot, and therefore more insidious. When the partners of verbal abusers hear the most outrageous name-calling, such as, "You're an ignorant bitch," they might say, "Hey, quit calling me names." On the other hand, covert or subtle abuse might be more confusing, such as, "You don't really want that." The person hearing this might be more inclined to say, "I do too," or "Why not?" rather than, "Hey, quit telling me what I don't want." Of course, defending yourself or explaining yourself to a rational person, "This is too what I want," usually results in a response such as, "Oh, sorry, I wasn't thinking," or, "That wasn't what I meant to say. I meant to ask you why you wanted that one." But a verbal abuser is not rational. If you've tried a rational response and it didn't work, please consider this possibility. The verbal abuser thinks an explanation is the same thing as an argument or a fight. One verbally abusive man told me, "I always thought you bring out your biggest weapons when you have a fight, don't you?" I explained to this man, who invariably fought his wife's rational explanations, that he wasn't having an argument or a fight. An argument is a rational debate in which each person argues his or her case. An explanation is not a fight either. For example, the explanation, "This is too what I want," is simply an explanation. It's an attempt to heal the relationship. The partner is saying, "I'm not the person you are referring to. I am a person who wants this, not that." A man I'll call Zeke had indulged in all forms of verbal abuse, attacking his partner Mindy and calling her lazy and hopeless because she failed to pick up their child's toy lawnmower. It was still on the front lawn when he came home. His wife explained how she hadn't had time because the baby was running a fever, and their oldest had missed a ride to an after-school party, and she'd had to stop everything to take her to the party. However, Zeke did not apologize. He continued to respond irrationally. There are a number of possible responses to name-calling. "I don't ever want to hear you call me names again." "Hey, you aren't me, a woman. You don't know what I am. Don't you ever tell me what I am again." "Would you repeat that, please?" The last option is most effective if said while the partner is holding up a tiny video recorder that is attached by a long cord to her belt or waist. The abuser probably won't repeat it, and he may hesitate to indulge in name-calling again. He may say, "Shut that off," and the partner may say, "No," and he may be even more abusive. If so, he has given implied consent to being recorded. He could have walked away. The partner must decide the safest approach if he is so irrational that he is dangerous. I often encourage callers to record, always with the abuser's knowledge, the abuse on video. Again, if he does not pose a danger to the partner, it can be effective. If he complains about the recorder, it is evident that he knows it is on. It is his responsibility to quit. It may not stop him, but the partner will have something educational for YouTube. For instance, here is an example of verbal abuse. When Mindy explained why she hadn't put away their child's toy lawnmower, she was trying to get Zeke to see that what he said was erroneous. He had, after all, assaulted her with an angry outburst. He defined her as lazy and hopeless. She was trying to mend the relationship. She wanted to be heard as if she existed, so he would apologize and maybe even offer to help. But Zeke didn't apologize. The relationship was broken by vicious words that slammed into her mind like a sledgehammer. These statements assaulted her consciousness, shaping her as a failure. If he could annihilate her consciousness, he would have more control over her. Tom is another man who made a habit of giving his wife Becky orders and directing her. In those instances, the best she could respond was, "Please don't talk to me like I am a child." Ultimately, Becky's goal would be to be able to say something like, "Don't give me orders," or, "I don't take orders. You're not my boss." The levels of verbal abuse. We've looked at verbal abuse from two perspectives. 1. The various categories of verbal abuse. And 2. The ways the abuser defines the partner and her inner world. Now let's take a look at verbal abuse from one more perspective. 3. How crazy, inexplicable, incomprehensible, or irrational is the abuser's behavior? At what level is it? Even though I'm presenting the levels of abuse from bad to the very worst, it is important to know that you can feel more or less emotionally devastated by any level of verbal abuse. This breakdown is meant to be a broad and general perspective on types of verbal abuse with the emphasis on how irrational the abuser is. Level 1. Denial and avoidance. Denial and avoidance are classic abusive behaviors. They're what the abuser is doing when he trivializes and counters his partner's experience in any way. Trivializing, diverting, discounting, blaming, abusive forgetting, countering, or claiming it was just a joke, these are all behaviors based on denial. They are all dishonest, cowardly behaviors. Why? Because the verbal abuser won't take responsibility for what he just said or did. He avoids the issue. He denies the partner's experience. "It was nothing. It's your fault. You're blowing it out of proportion." When countering, he denies his partner's perceptions. "No, it's this way. That's not so." Or the abuser denies his behavior directly. "We never had that conversation. It didn't happen. I don't know what you're talking about." Abuse at this level is all about maintaining the status quo or power over position, not getting into trouble and training the partner to accept more abuse. Denial doesn't seem as irrational as it does cowardly and irresponsible. In other words, it is explainable It is motivated by the abuser's need to deny his behavior and his partner's perceptions. Still, it is crazy-making behavior. If the partner doesn't know that this irrational behavior is grounded in irresponsibility and the abuser's fear of having been found out and called out, the partner may begin to think there is something wrong with her. She may think, maybe there is something wrong with me. If he didn't really mean it, and it seems like nothing to him, then maybe I should just take it. The problem with this thinking is she suffers more, and the abuser gets no honest feedback from the external world, and possibly no increase in consciousness. Denial or dissociative disorder. Note: an exception to viewing an abuser's denial of an event as simply denial would be if he had a dissociative disorder. If the abuser really doesn't recall what just occurred, he might have dissociated from himself, that is, spaced out, as some say. The Mayo Clinic website explains that a person with this disorder is someone who escapes reality in ways that are involuntary and unhealthy. The symptoms of dissociative disorders, ranging from amnesia to alternate identities, usually develop as a reaction to trauma and help keep difficult memories at bay. There are four major categories of this disorder described online at www.mayoclinic.com. Verbal abusers indulge in denial when their partners bring up or ask about an incident, a verbally abusive comment, or a pattern of behavior that bothers them and disturbs the relationship. The partner wants to see change or wants an apology because she wants everything to be okay. She wants to repair the relationship. Level 2. Anger addiction and name-calling. Angry outbursts and name-calling usually begin when the abuser doesn't get his way or his expectations met. Abuse at this level is similar to a child's tantrum. It is common for abusers to not only call names and yell at the top of their lungs, but also to turn red in the face and throw things. Sometimes they also hit people. The abuser seems to have only achieved the emotional development of a 2-year-old. The abuser is usually more angry than inexplicably irrational, although only he may know what he is angry about. Joey told me, "Now I know why I threw my partner to the ground. I just read Controlling People." "What happened?" I asked. "I thought Stephanie was going to walk over and offer to help me when she came in, but instead she said hi, then looked down at the mail, so I went into a rage and threw her to the floor." This is the same reaction we witnessed in the incident described on page 189, the toy lawnmower scenario in which Zeke called his wife names because she wasn't an extension of him, so to speak. It was as if he were a puppeteer who couldn't pull the strings that would make her perform according to his plan. The string to his wife puppet was broken. He lost his connection, string, to her. Feeling disconnected from her, he had a temper tantrum. So did Joey when he threw his wife to the floor. Level 3. Orders and threats. Orders, threats, and intimidation are a step beyond the tantrum. They are a my way or you'll pay kind of behavior. Orders and threats are two parts of the same behavior, and both are intimidating. Zeke gives orders because it has never occurred to him that he should treat others as he'd like to be treated himself. His behavior originates in a deep sense of powerlessness. Hence, he threatens his partner with angry abuse if she doesn't meet his expectations. He need not say, "I'll be angry if you do or don't do something I want." The threat is always present. He is consistently angrily abusive if he doesn't get his way. Some abusers threaten abandonment or other forms of punishment to get what they want. On the other hand, some keep their partners penniless and then flash some big bucks when they give orders and so manipulate their partners. Ordering threatening abusers demonstrate irrational and scary behavior, but generally, they are a bit more calculating and conscious than they are crazy. And their partners may see through what they are doing. These abusers cannot ask nicely for what they want. How can they? If they did, they would be giving their partners the freedom to say no. The partner would have the freedom to break the string the abuser has attached to her, the puppet. To give up the string, the tie to her, would break his only connection to her. And where would he be without his extension? At this level of abuse, partners live in fear. For many, fear is their only companion. There are two other extremely toxic and irrational abuses. They are at levels 4 and 5. Level 4. Attacks that undermine. Undermining attacks often take the form of accusations. Like all verbal abuse, accusing is a negative lie told to or about the partner. When told to others, it is called slander. Accusations are part of judging and criticizing. The abuser judges, then criticizes, and in criticizing, accuses the partner of acting or being wrong. Accusations are often unexpected attacks that are not based on any external conversation, problem, or argument. They seem to come from out of the blue. They are not questions such as, "Do you love me?" Typically, these accusations define the motives and actions of the partner as the opposite of what they actually are. The perpetrators of accusations are not necessarily denying their behavior, having temper tantrums, or demanding to get their way. They are extremely irrational, not simply weak, immature, self-centered, and petulant people. This form of verbal abuse attempts to destroy the very core nature of the partner. It seems inexplicable. Please note that this extremely toxic abuse, when it occurs in a relationship, is a constant through months and years. If it doesn't show up until the relationship ends, it may simply be the partner's angry outburst in reaction to years of abuse. If it has been going on throughout the relationship, it is likely to take the form of slandering the partner to the community, to the courts, and/or to the children when the relationship ends. Here is an example of this toxic accusing. A and B get out of a cab on their way to dinner. A homeless person is right there, holding up a sign with a cup for cash. A, feeling real compassion, drops a few dollars in the cup. Once A and B are seated in the restaurant and have placed their orders, B unexpectedly says in a fierce, glaring way, "I know why you gave money to that homeless person. You just had to impress the cab driver. That's why you did it." Here's another example. A and B are furnishing their new home. A asks B, "Where do you want to hang this picture?" The picture was a wedding gift that had been sitting around for weeks. Every now and then, A asked B again, changing the question in different ways. "Do you think it would look good here?" B would respond, "I don't know." Again, "Where would you like this hung?" Each time, B puts A off, saying, "I don't know." Finally, A, having a fine aesthetic sense, hangs the picture where it looks great. Days later, B says, "You know that picture? You've just had to hang it where you want it. You steamrolled right over me, as usual." This kind of accusing is destructive to the very core of the partner. If the partners of these toxic abusers try to explain their motives and define what was actually going on, "I asked you several times where you wanted it," they are again attacked with accusations such as, "You always have to win," or "All you care about is winning." Such assaults are shockingly evil and can so deeply traumatize partners that they may not